This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our final Big Brother Australia Season 12 podcast. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and with me here for one last time is Andrew. How are you doing, Andrew?
Hi, Taryn. I had two dreams. One of them was going to the Olympics. That never happened. The other one was being on RHAP, and here we are.
Oh, man. I'm so glad you haven't said that 10 more times.
Wait, what? Is Marissa 61? Wait, is Kieran bad at dishes? I've never talked about it before.
I mean, did she say it that many times, or did they just play the clip that many times?
They played clips of other people mentioning it too many times.
Oh, man. We're here. We're going to talk about the final week of Big Brother Australia, including the finale, if you can call it that. Again, I will apologize up front if you enjoyed it. I did not.
The part that I enjoyed the most was, oh, Taryn's going to be pissed about some of this. And I can't wait to talk to him because I'm feeling pissy as well.
Here's part of the problem. I almost wish that I was pissed. Watching the finale, I was just... nothing. I was just like, I just didn't feel anything.
I mean, no, I didn't care about the finale. It's the final five episode that I'm pissed about.
Oh yeah, I almost tweeted about that, but I haven't tweeted about Australia the whole time, and I didn't want to spoil anyone.
Who cares about spoiling them?
I got spoiled from Twitter so many times, so I didn't want to do it to anyone else.
I feel like
you need proper warning that like I'm an Australian Big Brother Twitter account, and I feel like I just didn't have that available.
Well, on your behalf, I did the angry tweeting for you.
There you go.
I have a feeling that a big part of what we're going to talk about is the final five, because I'm with you. By the time the final four rolled around, I was just gassed out like a car out of petrol.
All right. Well, let's talk about the final five. That's the first episode that we had, where it is now the new final five is, Chad and Sophie, Matt and Daniel. And then you have Sarah perfectly positioned in the middle of two pairs, the Devon spot that she didn't want, but that's actually great. But if she was on Big Brother Australia, it turns out it's not that great.
Yep, maybe in a strange way, it's full circle for Devon. Devon was right, just as Devon.
Truly. We'll talk about Sarah and the position that she ends up in, but overall, like, this is, we've reset and we're back at hearing more about how Matt and Daniel are upset about the twist, and they're being you know, poopy heads about it.
Debbie Downer. Maybe one. I would make a joke about how Matt should get a haircut because his hair looks like a moldy clown, but I guess I can't exactly make that joke with him. So.
And then they bring in like a dog to cheer them up?
Yeah.
Or something?
I think it was Benjamin the dog, David the dog. It's surely not Jackson the dog.
Surely not. Daniel comes around, but Matt is just having none of it.
You know that the edit that is positive must be trying really hard when even like when Matt is saying, oh, I can't, like, I don't want to see the dog. And that's all we see of him from the entire segment. I am like wondering, like, what is some of the stuff that got cut and left on the cutting room floor? Because, you know, the editors are really trying you.
I'm imagining, for those that have been following along with the Big Brother 4 documentary, I'm just imagining Allie and the mime with Matt and the dog. Like, he's like, no.
How do you think?
No.
I kind of almost wish Allie were in this house, though, because considering indignant Dan and Matt are, I just feel like she would enjoy, like, relishing, like, rubbing salt into their wounds if she ever won power. Be like, so I'm going to nominate the two of you and see what happens.
She would eat these people alive.
Oh, she would. She would devour them and spit their bones out on the edge of extinction. Like,
yeah,
I would pay money to see it. No, June and Allie both. I have to see both of them in this house with this particular cast.
Can we fly June over to Australia?
Well, what are the prices from Belgium? The plane prices,
right?
Yeah.
So they have the dog. They say, okay, we're fine. We'll play. And then we get the first of two different competitions that we have, because for whatever reason, we have special rules here in the Final Five, and only the Final Five, not the first Final Five, but the second Final Five, and not the Final Four after the Final Five. Just the second Final Five, and then the Final Four is back to regular rules.
Rigor mortis. I'm calling it right now. Rigor mortis. It's just, get ready for a rigory takeover, I guess.
So they somehow found a way to take the person in the best spot in the Final Five and make it so that person was the most likely person to go home.
It's one of those things where if literally all the stars had to align for Sarah to get eliminated, like if, say, Sophie was not the one to come back, say Kieran was the one to come back, maybe Sarah's still not the one who goes out there. Say that Sarah is not the one who's the last eliminated in that challenge. Maybe Sarah is still not the one to go out here. Say that that Chad didn't win the HOH and that Matt or Dan won it. Then Sophie goes out in that spot and Sarah might not be the one who's eliminated. It's just a literal clown car of mess upon mess upon mess, which led to the person best position going out. And that's why I'm really annoyed, because she was the best player in the Final Five. This should not be happening.
It's pretty ridiculous. So the first challenge is the first person out of the challenge is going to be automatically nominated. And again, this has never been a thing the entire season. Just is a thing only for the Final Five. And it's a very physical competition. Surprise, surprise. Mm. And so there was basically no chance that Sarah was going to not be the first one out here, despite the disadvantage that was given to Sophie. And so they then come back around and they're almost like saying, okay, we know it was incredibly unfair to have Sophie come back after Matt won a challenge. So here's where we're going to rectify it. We're going to give Matt an additional advantage in the Final Five, which is an extra vote. Even if he sits on the block, if he sits on the block, then he gets a vote. If he's not sitting on the block, he gets two votes. So you might say, oh, okay. So they're essentially, you know, they're giving them an advantage when they were disadvantaged. They're closing that loop only in giving Matt an advantage to theoretically make up for the Final Four twist. They've now screwed Sarah, and I don't think that Sarah is getting any twists to help her out.
Yeah, I mean, she's not the one like Kieran who took away $15,000. She's also not the one like Sophie who gets to, you know, have a reset button. She's not the one like Matt who gets a special power. No, what she is the best player in the house. Got screwed over. It's like we're rewarding people for bad gameplay, but then the one person who has played the least bad, we are screwing over. This is like ridiculous. Can I just say this? You know what is a really elegant solution, Taryn? All of this? How about you give Sophie the disadvantage in the next choice, like they did, and also give Matt an advantage, and that's it. One competition.
Yeah.
Easy. Am I like a genius or something? Like, how did they not think of this? It's just basic 101. I don't get it.
It's very unfortunate. It's sort of like, I think the most generous way to look at it, the most generous metaphor I can make is like, they're carrying a stack of plates and one of them fell off because of their own incompetence. And so then they, just dropped the rest of them in order to catch the one that fell off. It's oh no, we're not going to do something unfair. See, we're giving Matt. Oh, what have we done?
I'll extend on your metaphor by saying that they did drop the plates and they dropped it onto Sarah.
Yeah.
Yep. Sarah at the very bottom. It's like, this is like a strange combination where I feel extra bad for Sarah because of her edit, because she had the very like Johnny from Big Brother Canada 6 edit where. Now it makes sense. All season long, we were wondering, why is Sarah either edited as having HOHitis or being invisible, despite being a relatively like sensible human being who's likable and is one of the only people on this cast, by the way, who is followed by everybody else on the cast, which just says a lot. So why is someone who is just genuinely a good floater being edited in this weird way? Now we know it's because she's the twist-screwed person.
Yeah, she got advantage get-end, basically.
Yeah, she got serene. Because like, it's like serene game changes at the final six and nobody wrote her name down, but yet let's punish her.
Yeah, there was no situation in the final five where she would have gone home if not for every aspect of this, of this twist, if not for Matt having two votes, the challenge where she's auto-nommed, and then the fact that Chad wins the HOH, like all of those things had to happen in order for Sarah to have any possibility of going home. It was never going to happen if not for all of those things.
And can we just say, if the white room twist didn't happen, Sarah might have been in the final three and just, like, it's like she not only had to get screwed by one twist, she had to get screwed by two twists.
Well, so that's, I do want to talk about that because it did seem to imply that Matt and Daniel were planning on getting rid of Sarah and bringing Chad to the final three. And that makes sense to me given the fact that that's what they wanted to do, when they were going to win in final four. And they talked about Sarah being a threat and, you know, like Chad was one of the boys. So, do you have any additional information about that?
Well, firstly, before I give the additional information, fact number one, who won the final four challenge in the end? Chad. Who did Chad in the episodes want to go after? He wanted revenge, right, for his girl.
Well, but initially Matt had, like, if we say the final four challenge is the one that Matt initially won, instead of giving him an advantage, he wins the HOH instead, then theoretically they have the power to nominate from that point. Or to eliminate whoever they want.
Theoretically. But the thing about the extra information that we have to keep in mind is that apparently Sarah had done a really good job of basically taking everything that Chad told her after Sophie left and funneling it to the boys. And the boys were apparently upset that Chad would not just take their gracious offer of a final three. Because, like, how could you just not do this? Like, we voted out your girlfriend. Why would you not? Like, why are you telling Sarah, the target, all of this information? Like, and they're apparently salty about that because, you know, how dare Chad do that? How dare you? Remember when Marissa got in trouble talking to other people? Apparently in this house, the person who is, or when Casey got in trouble for talking to Kieran, it was very like that sort of mentality. And ultimately at this point, it's we don't know. It's a lot of he said, she said, but from what I heard, it was very much a 2v2 situation. It was like Chad and Sarah versus Matt and Dan. And we don't know. We honestly don't know, because it does sound like Matt and Dan were a little annoyed that Chad, you know, went ahead and spilled the beans. Because even in this episode, Sophie says when she returns from the white room, when the two boys are sulking, pre-dog entering the house, that it's like a, there's a very much like a line drawn in the sand. And from what I've gathered, it sounds like that line was still very much there even before Sophie got in there. So,
yeah. I guess we won't know. I mean, they obviously have incentive to imply that Sarah would have left had things been normal, since she gets screwed by them. Yeah. But it makes sense that, I mean, who knows what Matt and Daniel would have decided at the end of the day.
Well, what I find interesting is that Dan and Matt are saying that, oh, yeah, we would have totally gotten rid of Sarah at that point. But it's Chad, the winner. Spoiler alert, Chad's the winner. Chad is the one who's saying that, oh, yeah, I think I would have been in trouble without, like, Sophie coming back. And he has no reason to say that, which leads me to think, okay, maybe there is some like credence to this.
Yeah, I mean, Chad is also the person, like, it's Chad.
Yeah.
So
from Campbelltown.
Oh man. So that's it. I mean, that's it for Sarah. I mean, Chad is going to win the challenge. This is the lock one.
Yeah, the water lock one. The torture challenge.
Which I like in many ways is probably the challenge that Kieran would have had the best shot at. It's like, this is actually kind of a crapshoot challenge to a degree. And it figures that would be the one that Sarah goes out on.
Why didn't they let Sarah compete in this challenge? I don't get why they were like, okay, no, cause she's a nominee now. She can't even compete in this. It's like, if you're going to bend the rules and give Matt an extra vote, even if he's a nominee, just let Sarah compete in it. Like, maybe she should have the power to decide who goes up on the block. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they put her in a challenge that she had zero chance of coming anything but last place in, and then because of that said, now you can't compete in the challenge that you do have a shot in.
It just made no sense to me. And can we just spell it out for all the listeners how screwed she is in that? Essentially, she had a very strong final three with Chad and Sophie, to the point where it was like very like she was in like going into that HOH in a good spot. It was a 3v2 scenario, but she was like the person who Dan and Matt didn't want to go after, right? Like, Dan and Matt wanted to target Sophie with a passion. But then somehow, because of this competition and her coming last, her incentive now is, oh, now I have to have Dan and Matt win, because Sophie, unless Sophie is sitting next to me, because of Matt's extra vote, I'm going to go home, because suddenly it's going to be a 2-1 vote no matter what. Like, we just have to really break that down to people. Like, it's not only the fact that it's two competitions, one of them being a physical one, which Sarah can't win, but it's also Matt's vote. Like, why does he have a vote? I just don't understand why. They could have just given him a challenge advantage. Why? Please tell me, Darren, why? Is this the bad place? This is the bad place, isn't it?
I mean, you're just, I mean, just give him the HOH at this point, right? Like that even would be a slightly more fair, like, okay, Sophie, you did come back in, but Matt did win that HOH, and Sophie, you weren't able to compete because you got voted out. So fair is fair. Matt has the HOH. Like, even that's more fair, and that's giving him more power.
It's just like, it's like we're trying to bake, the producers were trying to bake a cake, but they weren't following a recipe, and they swapped out the salt and the sugar, and now we're just left with this mess. And like, on paper, everything looks fine, but really, I just feel like all the cake and the dishes and everything have been dropped on poor Sarah, and I just don't understand why. Because the easy solution is there. Just one challenge, give Matt an advantage, Sophie a disadvantage, done. And they didn't do that. For no reason.
I mean, I think,
like, do we want to go into conspiracy theories? Because the promos were very like, it's the showmans versus the bromance. Like, I'm not saying anything, but I will say that the promos did very much lean heavily on that.
I don't know. I mean, it's just, I mean, either way, it was just, it's just a mess. It's really just a mess is what it is.
Well,
whether it was whether it was a mess by design or a mess by incompetence, who knows?
I think it's maybe a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, because I will tell you this, inside tease, that the producers were very shocked and surprised that Angela and Sarah were fan favorites. Like, they were shocked by that, apparently. Because even in the finale, when they referred to Sarah as a fan favorite, according to Sarah's own exit press, she very much implied that the producers did not realize that there'd be a bit of a backlash to her going out like that. She's been very diplomatic in her exit press, but like, Karen, you weren't there when the live tweeting was happening. The moment that Final Five episode happened, like, the internet went wild and the local press here went wild too. Sarah is very much with Angela as a universal fan fave, and both of them were edited, I would say, in a not entirely heroic manner, but in spite of the producers' interference, they still came out with the audience's favor. And I think for season two, I'm hoping that production would have like learned its lesson and realized that, okay, no, we don't need to like force and ham fist our favorites. Let's just put the cards out where they are, let the audience decide who they want to root for, and then take it from there. Instead of doing this blatant favoritism, let me remind you that Dan got to talk on a video call with his girlfriend on a giant screen, while Sarah had to get a non-video phone call with her mother, and then also got screwed over by two twists. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, my experience with television producers is that they like to say they're going to make things better. But the same people that made this show, it's like, it's hard to believe that they're really going to be like, they really will have the knowledge of how to make it better.
I do think, though, that they, at least now they know for sure, because they were shocked and they're surprised. And I think the good things about the season were things that happened in spite of the producers. So like Angela being a breakout character was something that I didn't think they didn't anticipate. Or Sarah being as likable as it is. And I'm just hoping, praying that they pick a good cast and then let the cast play as they want to play.
Let me just be cynical for a second.
Okay, yeah.
I think that like the kinds of conversations that are likely to happen in this scenario are less, all right, guys, we screwed up. We did it wrong. We have to revamp. We have to think about how we are going to do better by the audience next time. We need to be more fair, and just let the audience decide their own favorites. Now, I think that the conversation is likely, okay, guys, we screwed up. We did not portray the narrative well enough. We did not control the audience's response well enough. They got mad at what we showed them. So next time we need to control it even more. We need to further pretend that, that things are all cool. We need to go, like, we showed too much bad stuff from Daniel and Matt, that it was not good enough. We showed too much bad stuff from Sophie and Chad. We need more goodness from our good players. More badness from our bad players. We let Angela get too popular. We let Sarah get too popular. Next time we need to be harsher on these edits.
My God, I haven't heard anything that control freaky since Age of Ultron. Oh my God. Where are the Avengers when we need them? or the Revengers, should I say. Bring Dan Giesling in as assistant producer. Make him do a few episodes. Make him get some like production credit or something. I don't know. We need a hero.
Yeah, we do. We do. And Sarah is not that hero because she's going to be evicted here in the first episode of the week.
Wait, we haven't discussed the best part of that episode. All of the glorious Bachelor in Paradise show montages between Chad and Sophie, who are clearly a couple. clearly love at first sight.
I will say, I think the most interesting part of the entire week to me was the producers backstabbing Sophie at the last minute. Where, oh, like, they had been building her up, and I was so convinced they were going that way. But I think someone pointed it out. It might have been on Twitter, it might have been on the podcast, that, like, you know, it's all down to the last thing people see. And
you said that. Literally.
It might have been me.
Yeah, you were saying that, like, it only takes 24 hours, like, one episode, and you include Ryan and Erica. It was you, yes. Karen. You're quoting yourself. You inspire yourself every day.
I didn't want to take credit for it if somebody else said it first, but very much so. It's very much the audience is, what did you do for me lately? And the producers basically decided, we're going to pump up Sophie until the last week, and then we're going to shift to Chad. And that's definitely what we saw. And it was slow. It was kind of slow at first in the first episode. I felt like we got like a more even edit between Sophie and Chad in the first episode. And then heading into the second episode, it started being all Chad all the time.
Did you know that Chad's dad is a Big Brother fan? I've never heard of that information.
I mean, it's almost as though that information was strategically withheld until the right emotional moment.
I mean, it is like, I'm just shocked. Like, I'm so moved that I think I should go vote for Chad. I had no idea. I'm thinking independently, and I'm making decisions out of my own volition. I am my God.
I mean, we're skipping a little bit, but seriously, when Chad is in the diary room crying that he won, which like genuinely is a touching moment. I'm not trying to like throw any shade on Chad, or anything like that, but like I was watching that clip and I was watching it play out, and the time was passing and I was like, oh my God, they did it. They're backstabbing Sophie here. They're just letting Chad run with it. And I almost thought they might screw themselves over here. Like, this might be too late. They might be splitting the vote between Chad and Sophie. Could we now see a Daniel win? Like, that thought crossed my mind.
I mean, we'll get to the vote when we talk about the vote. But it was, it's ironic that Sophie is a gymnast, because this is quite the backflip. Talking about the backflip and backtrack even more, just going to talk very briefly about the voting confessional final five, because it does piss me off a bit. Dan and Matt's confessionals, I'm just sorry. Like, every time I think, okay, maybe Dan deserves a vote or whatever, he, like, quickly reminds me why I'm not a big fan of him in some of his voting confessionals. About Sarah, he says this is something that you had coming for not being able to pick a side. And I'm saying, what is she supposed to do? Or, like, Matt's thing is like, oh, Sarah, I love you like a little sister, but, you know, I got to do what I got to do. And I'm like, why do they keep saying, like, and then Sophie saying, oh, you're like, I love you like a little sister. And I'm thinking to myself, Sarah is the only one, even her exit press, where she says in like the exit interview in the car, when the car's pulling out, she says, it's a game. Like, I'm not mad. She has a very good attitude for a 19-year-old who got screwed over by two twists. She's very like very mellow about it. Very like happy. It's just, I just, Dan and Matt's like indignation of like this implying that like somehow they have like a reason or a reason for everything that they've done instead of just owning their crap. Do you hear what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's a bit frustrating for me. Do you think though that, let's say that it's a normal final five where Matt doesn't have the vote, do you think that Sarah it still gets into the final three? So let's say Matt goes out at final five, right? Because he doesn't have the extra vote. So Chad is the HOH. He then breaks the tie and goes out. So it's Dan, Chad, Sophie, and Sarah. And then let's say Chad still, who do you think is the winner of the season in that scenario? So Matt's gone at final five.
I mean, I probably Sarah, right?
I think so too, because Dan probably leaves the final four, and I think Michelle
Chad still wins. It's not like Sarah's going to beat Chad, and even if she did, like then she wins.
Yeah.
Chad still wins the final four HOH, which means he probably eliminates Daniel, considering the way that they were playing. And that means Sarah is in the final three with Chad and Sophie. Did they release the vote totals? I doubt it, right?
No.
Yeah.
Very hush up.
But they definitely still would have pushed Chad, but the fact that they had been pushing Sophie leads me to believe that there's at least somewhat of a possibility that Chad and Sophie are splitting a decent chunk of votes. Add on top of that, the fact that you're saying that Sarah was very popular to begin with, like she might have had a chance to just win outright without them splitting the votes, but the fact that they probably did split some votes only furthers her case. So I'd say she has a very good chance.
So she got robbed. My question for you then is, if the producers were still pushing the Chad edit at Final Four, would Sarah still win in spite of that? I think that's the more interesting question for me. Because, I mean, I think you're right, Taryn, in that the Final Four, like the final episode, is going to have the most impact on the audience's mind. But I'm trying to think, is there ever a scenario where even if the producers are trying so hard, the audience will still vote another way? What happened in OTT, like with the whole Morgan Jason situation, do you know?
Well, OTT didn't really have an edit. That was part of the thing. It was all feeds, and they had like a weekly wrap-up, but it was a pretty neutral one. What happened was, you know, it was a very close vote, and, there were two people from one alliance and one person from the other alliance, and any number of things could have changed the outcome, because they did release how many votes it was, like, close by. We did the math, because, like, you could vote multiple times, but, like, I think it was something like a couple hundred votes difference, when you extrapolate to like 10 votes a person or something. So it was very, very close. And the person in third place probably got more than the amount of votes it was that close by. So if it had been consolidated, you probably would have seen a different outcome. Even just losing a small amount of votes to your partner that you bring into the final three with you is going to be pretty bad if it's a close vote, which I imagine it would be if we're looking at like a fan favorite versus a producer favorite who's going to edit the producer favorite really well. So I think it could be close, but the fact that, here's the thing, I think the producers messed up, and maybe they would have edited it all differently. Maybe Sarah gets a more negative edit if they know she's in the final three and they want Chad to win, right? And that's the thing. Like, if they really cared, they probably would have done that. And they probably would have pushed Sarah more negative, and then Chad still probably wins. And that's why I'm so against this format in the first place, because they have complete control over the outcome.
But I thought the all who wins, you decide. But I guess the you in this case is the production team.
Exactly. I think given how Sarah was edited all season long, if she somehow then was in the final three with Chad and Sophie, even if they push Chad last minute, I feel like Sarah probably still has a good chance to win. But I'm assuming that if she had made it to the final three, producers would have edited her differently, and then we still would have seen a Chad win.
Well, some insight.
Unless they decided they wanted Sarah to win for whatever reason,
or Sophie to win for some reason.
Right.
Yeah, well, because they didn't backflip away.
Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show.
My question is, I was impressed by Sarah in terms of her final pitch to Dan, right? And I think it does warrant discussing it, because I thought it was very clever, the pitch that she had to Dan, where she said, look, I'm going to have to try. She never gave up. Let's give her credit. Let's give her a proper eulogy. Even when the twist happened, she did the right move, where instead of sulking like, Dan and Matt, what does she do when the twist happened? She said, well, I want to work with Chad and Sophie, but I can't do that anymore. Once I was last place, I had to go to Dan and Matt, and which is exactly what she did. And then she convinces those two to continue targeting Sophie, which is the correct move for her. And then what does she do? Even when Chad wins the HOH and her state is field, she goes up to Dan while he's cooking taco, look, you know, hashtag Taco Tuesday, looks at the spice mix and then points out to Dan, tonight, don't think about anyone else. Think about yourself. You can't let other people hold you back. Do what you need to do to win the money, and tells him, if you're there in the end with Matt, you're going to split the vote and the third person will win. Take me there instead. Karen, aren't you proud that Sarah is essentially using the same logic you used last week about whether or not you should go to the end with your partner? Aren't you proud of that?
This was genuinely the best strategy I've seen in the entire season. I do not mean to be, people always, they, whenever I compare a player to a good player, they're like, that's not a Dr. Will, but this is the Dr. Will strategy. Like, she is a mini Dr. Will in this moment. Dr. Will is the devil on your shoulder saying, do what's best for you. Be selfish for the first time in your life. And Sarah is doing that to a much less subtle and effective degree, of course, but she's doing that sort of thing. Like, do what's best for you, Dan, think about your own game. And she makes a good logical case, which is if you get to the end with Matt, then you will split the vote. I think unfortunately for her, Daniel is not a logical player. And B, I also think that it's a hard case to make here at Final Five. It's an easier case to make at Final Four. Because if Daniel gets rid of his partner at Final Five, now he is solo going into the Final Four, and he basically needs to win hands down because by Sarah's own logic, she is then incentivized to take out Dan at Final Four, to go to the end with a pair who will split their votes and then she will win. And she's also incentivizing Dan to take her out at Final Four. Not that that would matter, because at least she made it to Final Four, but it is a tough case to make if Dan is thinking logically, and he's not really much of a logical thinker based on what we've seen so far. So it does seem like it was doomed to fail from the start.
But that's what that's the thing, though. Even though it was doomed to fail, she still kept going. Do you remember one of my favorite Star Wars movies is Rogue One, right? The reason why I like Rogue One is that even though we know from the very beginning that the rebels are going to fail, it's about hope. You keep trying. Even when, you know, the Darth Vader is coming in swinging a lightsaber saying, I'm from Broken Hill. You keep going. You keep moving forward. And I want to give her credit for every twist that the producers threw away. She pivoted. She pivoted like Ross with the sofa and friends. She pivoted when Chad and Sophie, when Sophie came in, she pivoted and worked with them. When she became a nominee, she pivoted and started working with Dan and Matt. When Chad won the HOH, she pivoted and specifically campaigned to Dan. And I think I know that one of the reasons why I don't think I'd be a very good Big Brother player is that I think it takes a lot to be like that flexible and quick and to not take things so emotionally. And I think it's a testament to who she is as a person, where instead of ruminating and sulking and not petting the dog, unlike some people, she is able to play ball and I think have a sunny attitude. And I think kudos to Sarah. She was, I think, the best player this season. And I'm going to put my foot on. Maybe it's a hot take, but I think, in Big Brother Australia 2020, Sarah McDougal was robbed and was the Suri Fields of this season.
I'm with you on Rogue One too. Both points.
She's one of the Force, and she, poor Sarah, has drifted off into join, you know, Master Yoda, Suri Fields, and the other robbed people of the universe. Mm. Yeah.
So that's it. That's it for Sarah. I agree on all counts. I think Sarah was probably the best player. I'm still not like super, super high on her overall. I think, but on a grading on a scale, I think, definitely up there.
Can you at least concede that she's a better player than Annalise Talavera now? Because last week we were like, is she a 5? Is she a 4? Come on. She's a 5 on the Stockwatch now at this point.
You know what? With that last play, for sure, I would give her at least So here's the thing. Earlier in the season, give me Sarah at the start of the season. I'm giving her like a three,
yeah,
right?
Three, yeah.
Two or three. You know, she's winning competitions and then just letting the other person run them for no reason. She's like falling into hating on Hannah for no reason and then regretting it later. Like she's all over the map. But then like, you know, mid to late season, Hannah, I'm more of like a solid three,
Sarah.
Maybe a four.
Sarah.
Yeah. I, as soon as I said Hannah, I was like, I know I'm going to screw it up now because I said Hannah, and now I'm going to say Hannah again.
Hannah was robbed.
Sarah.
Hannah was also robbed, let's be honest.
Yes. Sarah, the mid to late game Sarah, I think is probably close to like a solid three, maybe a four. But that this final week, Sarah, that play alone, I think, gets her at least a four. Maybe this week I would have given her a five or something. But overall, probably like a four, given the if you average it out a little. But I, you know, it's again, grading on a scale, that's about as high as it gets on Big Brother Australia. So far,
you heard it here first, folks. Sarah McDougal is a better player than Sis from BB21.
She did it. She broke.
She did it.
She broke the Australian glass ceiling.
Yes, she did it. She understands what an adjective is now. Sarah, you did it.
All right. So we head into the next episode, and
Chad, yay.
Do you even have like, because sometimes, like, sometimes I feel like there's not too much of note in an episode, but you are able to find joy in places that I find miserable. But even you must admit that this penultimate episode was pretty dry, and I don't know that there's much to talk about here.
I call it the Chad coronation episode. It was very
truly
much like I haven't seen a coronation this blatant since Mike Holloway and Walter Pott. It was very much the golden road. But I will say some of the things I did find joy was Angela giving us a Skype into a home library.
No. I forgot that they talked to the other people.
Which, it reminded me that, this is why I like the season. Angela. And how effortlessly good she is at television. Because of course Angela would, you know, have all those books and has like fabulous hair and is living her best life and is tuning in.
I feel like this episode is even weirder in hindsight, because it was so dramatic without being compelling, but like the music was swelling and they were like going out into the backyard and like a crane shot, like, oh my, like it's ending, it's over, what a journey we've had. And it was like, ooh, like this is what happens when it's like it's the production team's like first season, you know what I mean? And I'm sure there's experienced people on the team, but like once you do a bunch of these seasons, you start to like, you get over it. You don't care as much. You don't put as much effort into it. But this felt very much like it's special, guys. We're ending the season. Let's make a big deal out of it. When you contrast that with the finale, which was just like so
bizarre.
So dry, yeah. So just like level. It was like, oh boy. And I think you can tell the difference in that final episode. They're like, oh, it's the end of our first season back. It's so special to us. And then, a few months later, after the fan response and, everything, just like, all right, let's just get this over with.
We will talk about the reunion special. I'm not going to call it a finale. That's what it was. It was a reunion special. We'll talk about it because there's a lot to unpack there. I will say, though, that Taryn, you know how you were being the cynical one earlier? Let me be the cynical one for you now. You said, oh, these are like, it's like first season type thing. It's going to get better. I don't think it will. Australian
Survivor. Well, no, I don't think it. I think it gets, I think it gets worse. I think that like it's special to them now. And so they make like, so it's like you can get a sense of the emotional drive of the producers sometimes.
Yeah.
You can tell, like, Amazing Race season one, the finale is like super dramatic because it's the end of their first production, right? Season two, it's still pretty dramatic. Over the course of time, we're now in Amazing Race like 30 or whatever, and the season ends with like a do-do-do, because they don't care anymore. If to the contestants do, because it's the same experience for the contestants, to them it's super dramatic, but production has changed their outlook on it, and so that reflects in the edit that you get on the thing. So I would expect that over the course of time, you see less of these, you know, like in Survivor, the, you know, fallen comrade. I don't remember. I never remember.
Yeah.
It was Fallen Comrades. There you go. They like in the big dramatic finish of the season, and now it's it's much more low key. Like they just they stop caring as much about it being a big deal because they've experienced it a bunch of times.
The over dramatic music is a staple of Australian television. This is the same production team which was partially involved in Australian Survivor and in MasterChef Australia. Let me tell you, MasterChef Australia has been around since MasterChef Australia has been around since I was straight, right? So it's like back when I was straight. That's how long ago it was. And that show is still doing the overly dramatic music. Australian Survivor is still doing the like overly dramatic, oh, crane shots and dolly shots and high budget theatrics for the most mundane moments. They do that no matter how much time has passed. To illustrate to people, the last time I was straight was 10 years ago. So for MasterChef Australia to be still doing that, it just makes me feel cynical about whether Big Brother Australia is going to, you know, be less extra. Because I have this feeling, sinking pit in my stomach, that, oh, they're going to do this, isn't it? Is again, yeah, it's a staple of Australian TV.
Maybe what it is then is more along the lines of like this is just, it's like there's that, it's not, I mean, because this is how it came off, is that it felt dramatic but not compelling, which is what I said earlier, which like maybe the reason for that is because they were just going through the motions and they didn't actually even feel this way then.
Mm-hmm.
But that this is like just the generic way to end things for all Australian television, maybe.
This felt to me like a very phoned in generic Australian ending, which makes sense because it's a rushed season. Remember, it's a shortened season because you know what was happening during this entire season? A little known pandemic called COVID-19.
Mm.
Yeah, never heard of it. It's like Sophie going to the Olympics. Never heard of it, but
yeah.
But yeah, I just have a cynical feeling in my stomach that the extra crane shots will continue to happen. it's like Julie Chen saying, but first, it's a staple.
Well, yeah, like, you know what? Like, when I am compelled, when I do care about the season and the characters and the finish, like, I don't mind an overdramatic ending. Like, that's, like, I'll take it. It's just when it feels dry and, no. Guys, you did not earn this ending. We're not with you on this ride, or at least I wasn't. I'm sure there were some people that were.
I agree with you. They didn't earn this happy ending. It's like, where's our heroes? It's suddenly, you know, where are the heroes? Where are the villains? Where is the epic storylines of like, you know, the friendship versus the Sovereign Six? Like, where is that? If you haven't earned it, then don't do it. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I've been more compelled by, you know, a 5-hour game of Sequester than.
Are you saying that Sequester is a better show than Big Brother Australia and its high budget theatrics?
Yeah.
Audrey Middleton will be very proud that you're saying this. Someone click this and send it to her. But if we are speaking of the small nuggets that of joy that I wrung out of this dry final four, it was just how, well, Angela in the library, and it was also just like little things, like how they called the white room twist a fiasco, and the producers included that in the episode, which made me think, was that twist like pop, like in, was that twist like in, did the producers realize that the twist was going to backfire the way that it did, and they realized that it backfired after Sarah and that whole thing happened? I don't know, like, that's those like thought experiments are what actually interests me and what is otherwise drier than, you know, paint wall. I'm trying my best.
Usually how this works is the producers think of twists in a vacuum. And they think, oh, wouldn't this be good? And then sometimes they get to like, oh, well, I guess that might be a little unfair. Well, what if we do this? Like, they don't think about the actions or the combinations of their actions. So like, what probably happened was they were like, white room twist again. Got to make sure we're able to save the fan favorites just in case or whatever. And then, you know, it could have even been just like, oh, but Matt and Daniel are complaining. People might get mad that this wasn't fair. We'll give them a little bit extra, advantage to, you know, make it a little more fair. Or maybe they always plan to do it, but then they also thought separately from all of that, oh, what if we make the final five two competitions, because we love competitions, and we'll make it so the first person out is like automatically out of the game. No, that's too much. They'll automatically nominated, and then we have another competition where it's HOH. It's going to be great. And then as they watched it play out, they watched Sarah get auto nominated, and they were like, wait a minute. I see now what happened. Didn't think about that. Like, they don't think through the ramifications of their twists in the context of the game that they designed, because they didn't really design the game. They're just borrowing it from somewhere else, right? Even the US producers at this point are just borrowing it from themselves in the past. And I don't think they even understand how it works.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think Karen, you were right the entire time by saying that twists are bad. Because in the big wash of things, I would rather get rid of both the bunker twist, which brought back Angela, and the white room twist than what we have right now. The bunker twist was great, but if having twists means that I have to watch Sarah go out like this, then just keep Angela pre-jury and then not screw over Sarah like this. Taryn was right. We should live in a purist system with no twists.
Or at least just think them through. That's all I ask, really. Yeah.
The only time that we should have twists is when Twisto's twists are being sponsored. That's when the only time twists are appropriate.
All right. Well, this is a very straightforward episode. It's two pairs against each other. It's basically just going to come down to which pair is going to win the HOH. And it's I did like the challenge. I think that it was a nice combination of strategy, skill, and physicality, which did lean still a bit toward being physical, but it had enough strategy that, like, Chad with a bum ankle was able to pull it out, which I enjoyed. And I think it was a good way to finish. It did feel very Survivor, but whatever. It was an okay way to finish the season out, competition wise. I felt.
What would you prefer? Like, what was better for you? Chad winning this epic challenge on a bum knee, or Steve winning a crapshoot and taking out Vanessa? Which would you prefer? Good players winning in a crapshoot competition, or bad players winning in a non-crapshoot?
I mean, I'll take the good players every time. I mean, I'm an advocate of crapshoot competitions all over the place. I enjoy them. I think they make the skill level higher for the wall that you need to get over. You need to make sure that Steve isn't going to gut you. That's how Big Brother works in the end. But it would definitely. In this season, if it was a crapshoot, then it would have just been a crapshoot, because it was set in stone what was going to happen. So,
which is why I felt a little annoyed when the producers try to create suspense by saying, "Oh, maybe they like who knows what's going to happen." And I'm saying, we all know what's going to happen. Can we not do this false pretense? Like, it was, the line is very clear in the sand. It is just
yeah.
But, you know,
Chad wins. Ratings. It's dramatic.
Yeah.
Did it for his dad.
It's a ball challenge, and yet another Keith Nail. Keith Nail should deserve some producer credit considering the number of ball challenges this season had. hold him all up.
Maybe Casey, you know, Casey, famous at being good at ball challenges.
Let's go.
Yeah. So
let's go into Chad, Big Brother 22. Let's go.
Yeah. They try to convince us that Chad is going to do something other than the thing that he said he was going to do many times before, which is take out Matt. But of course he's going to take out Matt. And they still can't just have Chad tell Matt in front of him. He still has to go to the diary room and then come back and have, Sonia do it.
I will say that the most compelling thing about the post not challenge scrambling was how somehow for some reason Chad and Sophie think that Dan is the funniest guy in the house and how Australia is gonna love him. I just found that very odd. Because I'm not sure if you're aware, Tara, but the public has very much done a U-turn, to use a Amazing Race metaphor, on Dan. So it was very odd that the episodes were saying, yeah, Dan is funny and great and likable and he's going to just win in a landslide, when the episodes are simultaneously throwing Dan under the bus. It was odd.
I mean, to be fair, I think he's probably one of the funnier people on the cast.
I think so, too.
I think likability is where he suffers. But he is able to crack a joke here and there, more so than most of them.
Which segues me to my next point. I think Chad and Sophie made the wrong decision. I really do.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too.
Because, I'd like to hear your reasoning about why you think it was the wrong decision between Dan and Matt.
For me, based on the edit, and again, who knows? Maybe if Matt makes it to the final three, then he gets a slightly better edit than Dan. Who knows? But based on what I was seeing, I mean, look, just on the dog alone, you have one guy who warms up to the dog and another guy who just refuses to warm up to the dog. Like, that is the best barometer of popularity. Nobody who is unwilling to warm up to a cuddly little dog is going to win a vote of any kind ever.
It was a golden retriever, too. We are not talking like a pit bull here. It is the cutest, the golden, fluffiest dog that we have seen on Big Brother so far.
Also, take Cody Nixon from Big Brother 19, put a dog in the house. If he refuses to cuddle up to that dog, he's not winning America's Favorite anymore. Not going to happen.
Yep. You know, but it's like, in the upside down land where logic doesn't apply in Big Brother Australia. Oh, maybe they're thinking, oh, Dan is a likable dude and he's so funny. Okay, yeah, let's not vote him out.
That's what it felt like to me. It felt like they liked Dan more.
I didn't understand why that they were saying that Dan's a threat to win because he's likable and then just keep him. Like, if you like him so much and that's why you want to keep him, fine, then stop saying that Australia is going to vote for him to win. Like, it just doesn't compute in my head.
Yeah.
Like, because I'll tell you this. Dan cuddled the dog. Dan also, I feel like, it was the more strategic person in that pair of Matt and Dan. Mm-hmm. So he also gave the producers more material to work with. In the finale, when Dan said that he, has only had two eviction votes cast against him the entire season, that is impressive. Why would you take someone like that with you to the final three? I just don't comprehend it.
Yeah, Dan is more likable. He's a footy player. He's more in shape. He's the better player. He's one of the better players in the entire house. From almost every aspect, other than the fact that he's not from Broken Hill. It's just like, there's no reason to expect that Matt would do better, I think.
I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record from Broken Hill, but Dan had his girlfriend appear on a giant screen and they profess their love to each other. There is no way to portray that negatively. So Sophie and Chad have to have known that Dan, even if he's getting the villain edit, is still more threatening in a public eye, public vote, than Matt is. So why not just keep Matt and vote Dan out? Like, to me, this is such an obvious decision, which is why I am frustrated. But on the other hand, at least we have something to talk about here. Because it wouldn't be Big Brother Australia if people are making decisions which make no sense.
Yeah, I feel like I have been going through the stages of grief and I have reached acceptance where it's what I expect from them. at this point, and you're, I feel like you are now where I was last week or the last couple weeks, you know, like, what are they doing? Like, they're gonna do it. I just, whatever, I'm done. I can't care anymore. I have to come to expect that if they have to make a decision, they're gonna make the wrong one, and it's gonna be okay.
It's like, if we're doing stages of grief, I'm Rose from Titanic on the door while you're like the old lady throwing the necklace into the ocean. That's like different stages right now.
So
the heart will go on, Taryn. It will. And it will go on to Big Brother 22.
That's it for Matt from Broken Hill. And we have our final three, Sophie, Chad, and Dan, which is pretty much honestly what I've been expecting since before Kieran left, and maybe even earlier, but right, I think right around then for sure I was thinking it's Sophie, Chad, and Daniel probably. And Sophie, I thought Sophie would win, just that just felt the way that it was going, but then they flipped it around. So they did surprise me a little bit by choosing to backstab Sophie. But here we are, Daniel, Chad, and Sophie, and we're gonna head into the, I guess if you don't want to call it the finale, but it is when we reveal the winner.
It's called the reunion plus winner reveal. It's like the last, like, it's like the last 2 minutes of the Survivor episode with like the reunion attached to it. That's what it is. It's like the reading of the votes and then the reunion. That's what it is.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Did they show any new footage on the reunion special?
I tweeted about this actually. There's a lot which they left on the cutting room floor, but I think it's better if we just go chronologically through the finale and I'll like jump in and say, because I have a lot to say. I'm a bit frustrated. So yes. The answer to your question is yes. Yep.
Well, because here's the thing. I could not pay attention to this for the life of me. And I did on occasion do a little bit of speed up and some skipping here and there.
Well, that's why I'm here, because I'm like almost like your unpaid intern doing the hard work here, you know. I'm Robert De Niro and you're Anne Hathaway.
This felt like the clip episode of Big Brother, except it's the finale. And I didn't see any new footage, which again, I did speed it up and I was not giving my full attention, but everything I was hearing, I felt like I had heard before and it wasn't compelling to me the first time. So it definitely wasn't the second time. And even their reaction shots, which some people get wrong, circle. But even even giving the reactions, like, it wasn't very good because they'd already seen it. Right? Like, these people have watched these episodes at home. And so when I watch Kieran watching himself, I can tell that he's trying to give them what they want, but it's just not, I know he's not surprised or anything like that. So,
yeah, I've seen more genuine emotion from the animated characters of The Last of Us that I have from the real human beings on this reunion show.
I did like that they were all socially distanced. I appreciated that.
Yeah, all the chairs were equally spaced out, but then, oh my god, they're kissing and hugging at the end. So, what's the point? What's even the point?
I didn't even think about that.
It's like, oh, like, once Chad's the winner, oh my god, yay, hug, hug, kiss, kiss. It's like, if that's not a metaphor for the season, I don't know what
it
is. It's like, they try so hard, and it's well-intentioned, but, oh, look at that, Sarah's out. But, if we're going to talk about, you know, going in chronological order and the things that, you know, we've yada, yada, yada through, I will give Sonia some credit here. I think she's gotten better at hosting as time went on. I think in the beginning, as a host, she was, you know, giving them softballs, right? And do you agree with me, Taryn, that by the end, I think she's gotten better as a host in general?
She did, on occasion, ask someone a question, and then when they didn't answer it, she would then ask the question again, which can be fun. But I was still at those tribal council segments, just like, oh my god, especially in the late game when there was nothing for them to say.
Which is odd. Then, you know, Because Sonia like, had more to say later when there was nothing to say than she did earlier when there is something to say.
Yeah, and like I don't know. Like I feel like she's doing an admirable job. I just feel like she doesn't have a purpose. There's not she's doing fine with where she is. Like she's no Orisa or anything, but like there, like what? Why is she really? Why is that? Why does that segment even really exist? And why does this reunion segment really exist in the way that it does? I want to see. Like there's been drama all season long on social media between these people. I'm not even a drama person, man. I don't watch the challenge for the reunions where Polly gets up and does a little dance. I don't need that. But like, let them hash out their differences a little bit here. Like, let's talk about the conflicts. Let's talk about this stuff. Like, was there any mention of Hannah and Kieran here? Because I was waiting for it and I never saw it.
Well. And one of my tweets was Hannah and Kieran getting fake married by Shane, who's a marriage celebrant. Remember Shane? Shane, poor Shane, who gets cut out of even the finale episode. Shane married them at the wedding. He married them at the reunion, and that entire footage was just cut out. Just like the footage of them. They kissed. Like it was done during the break. The two of them like holding hands, and they just cut that out. And it makes no sense to me. It was such a cute.
Oh, sorry.
Moment.
This is too interesting and new. We are very focused and dedicated on bringing people the already seen footage that wasn't exciting. We are not allowed to mention any group chats. We are not allowed to mention any budding romances. No. We are going to individually question a person and then run through the montage of that person that you've seen. That is how this is going to work. Please do not make our show more entertaining. That is not the point of this.
It's like the Greek myth of Sisyphus, that guy who was condemned to roll a boulder up the hill every day, and the boulder would come down a little bit, and it's just like, you're stuck there.
Are you saying that we need to embrace the absurdity of Big Brother Australia and learn to enjoy what we can?
Hey, you gotta just roll with it, you know? rolling in the deep. It annoyed me beyond belief when I found the footage. Like I went into Mike Goldblum, who's a BB Australia personality, his Twitter, and I found the footage of Hannah and Kieran getting faux married by Shane. And I can't for the life of me find a singular reason why they would not include that in the finale. It's cute. It's wholesome. It's funny. It is Kieran being naturally funny. It's Hannah getting deserved airtime. Why would you? It's Shane. Like, why? Karen, help me.
I think it says a lot about the state of the show that on Big Brother 20, we were like, okay, Swaggy proposed to Bailey. Great. Did we need that? We had a lot of other stuff we needed to get to. But in Big Brother Australia, we're like, there was nothing. We could have at least gotten a fake proposal. like there was just nothing else. I don't know why they wouldn't show anything that they had.
It was a fake proposal. It was a fake marriage. It was everything. It was so cute. And it makes no sense to me. I haven't felt like this annoyed since like the whole grateful circle in BB21. It's, oh God. But there was a lot that was cut out. In the finale, apparently Garth exchanged some words with Angela, because you know, there's that group text that we never talked about on the finale, but we all know exists because it was in the Daily Mail. And can you please tell me, Taryn, why they didn't include Garth and Angela exchanging words? Why not include that? Isn't that good television? Weren't they in a bunker together?
That's exactly what I just asked for.
Like, but that's the thing, though. It's like they literally had the footage. It's there, and they just didn't include it. That's what's galling to me. It's not like I could give them a pass if it wasn't there, but if spontaneously there was footage, why not include that? But instead, we got to get a segment about Ian and Patricia the Spider. Bring it full circle. I just felt that it was very apropos when Sonia said, oh cool, so boring TV. I'm like, oh, that's so on the nose.
Yeah.
Did you catch this though, that when Sonia was talking to Sarah, the thing about the knees?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like what did you think about it? Because just to recap for all the listeners, you might have fast forwarded through it. Sarah said, I didn't tell Big Brother about my phobia. I think he got it from my doctor's report. It's a clearly diagnosed fear. I didn't tell anyone about this. And then she says that Big Brother's gone next level. He accessed my medical information. I saw an injury happen with a knee involving someone, and it is a traumatic experience. And I'm like, oh my God, poor Sarah.
Right. Like, that was super weird. But it's also weird to me that it was left in.
It's because I think at this point, the producers kind of realize that Sarah is a fan favorite, and they did mistreat her. You got to give her some credit. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but she's basically accusing them of using her medical history against her, against her will and consent.
Yeah, but this is why we like Sarah, though. Remember last week when she said, ugh, I need to put on a bra for this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, Sonia reminded me.
Yeah. it's very cold in Australia right now. Winter is coming. But I don't know if that was kosher, what Big Brother did to Sarah, but I appreciate the Sarah content that we did get. And I also appreciate the Angelicious content that we did get, especially when Angela admits that, yes, she likes the Big Brother voice. And has asked her husband to do it for her.
Man, I wish I could say that even Angela, I just wasn't super it was just too much repeating of stuff. And I feel I want to hear from Angela, how do you feel about your fellow castmates now?
I want to hear from
Angela. I want to hear from Angela, all sorts of stuff that isn't so Angela, how you're drinking your tea, it's have you put your lip gloss on?
I wanted to ask Angela about her real feelings about, some of the race stuff. I'm surprised that they just glossed over that. Because let me tell you, Laura, Angela, and Alan have all talked about it, but they did not ask her about that because, that'd be too interesting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Zoe and
this
and
is,
Laura
this is why
there,
I feel like if they like when if they are like, oh, we're going to improve. We're going to make it better. This was not filmed months ago, guys. This was a today thing. This was a live thing. This was your chance to fix what you had done before. If this is an example of how we're going to move forward again, I think that the example that they're setting is we're going to lock down even more. We're going to cut out even more. So that you can't figure this stuff out and get mad at us for it.
Almost like you're advocating for the return of live feeds. Almost.
Oh man,
that'd be a new idea. Wait a minute, a novel concept. But I will say that the most interesting thing that they did not include, and I really want to hear about, is the Chad Sophie relationship. Because remember last time how I told you Chad might have a girlfriend in LA, and how it was palpably awkward between the two of them, where Sonia even asked him, there was talk of marriage last time. And Sophie gives that very cringy answer of, honestly, I thought Chad was coming here tonight to get engaged, but I found out pretty quick that wasn't happening.
Yeah. And she also says that they haven't seen each other since the show, and that this is the first time they've seen each other since the show. I don't know if anybody recalls, but he offered to have her move in with him after the show because of COVID, and they have not seen each other since the show. And I felt like there was a lot of her looking over at him like, hey, and a lot of him not looking over at her.
It was apropos that I compared them to Nicole and Corey because, Christmas. It's every day's Christmas.
Does that mean that Sophie is going to end up marrying
Kieran? Yeah, that's happening.
Xavier? No, Xavier. I think Xavier is the right Victor analog.
Yeah, sure. Why not? And that's an upgrade, in my opinion. But
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe she ends up with Dan or something. Because I think that is
she
even
likes
better
tall guys, right?
Yeah, true. But that's what I'm saying, though, is that I want to find out more about the Chad-Sophie dynamic. So why are they giving us the boring Chad-Sophie stuff in the penultimate episode and not giving us the juicy Chad and Sophie content in this episode? It made no sense to me.
Exactly. They should have done a follow-up before people cast their votes, because I guarantee you, although I guess that would have ended with a Dan win. Look, if they wanted Dan to win, they would have done that.
Well, have you, Taryn, I know this is like a stupid question, but have you ever watched The Bachelor, The Bachelorette?
I've tried a few times, but I haven't gotten more than a couple episodes in.
Oh, what's more difficult, The Bachelor or Big Brother Australia?
I mean, I guess The Bachelor.
Yeah, well, the most compelling part of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette is often the final episodes, right? Where they check in with the couple and see, are they still together, right? And there's like a whole thing about, oh, are they still together? Are they not? That's the most compelling part, because we want to see whether or not love survives. But we didn't get that. So it doesn't make sense to me in that, okay, if you're going to give us a Bachelor in Paradise couple all season long, at least give us the resolution. Don't Game of Thrones us here. Finish it well, please.
What we get here is, all right, final three, give us your final pitches for why people should vote for you. And so we'll talk about the pitches in a second, but they give their pitches and then they say, all right, guys, and that's it. Voting is closed.
Sophie literally had like 2 seconds for people to vote for her.
And so the final pitch is Daniel makes a decent one, I think. He starts out pretty good. He's joking like he usually does. Like, hey, guys, hanging out here. But then he gets serious and it gets boring, which I thought was a mistake. Keep with the jokes, dude. Then we go, I don't remember the order now.
You forgot to mention that Dan brought up the fact that he was bait. And that was one of the reasons why you should vote for him. How could you?
Clearly did not listen to this podcast. Sophie. Oh, okay, but well, let's go to Sophie next anyway. Sophie says that she has sort of like the "this is my dream" speech. It's fine. It's nothing. Again, nothing crazy. we have Chad though, who like what. Was he intoxicated? Like, I don't know what was happening here with Chad, but he just was like mumbling incoherently to me. Like, he was just like, yeah, well, just, you know, big brother's cool and stuff. And I think it would be cool to do the thing and win maybe, or I did the morals thing. So that's why, you know, I think you can do the big brother with some morals and, you know, that's that sort of thing.
Hey, cut the guy some slack for being a little tipsy. You would be too if you had to spend sequester with your ex-girlfriend and some guy called Dan Not Giesling.
I don't know about that.
A little inebriated.
It was strange. It was strange. And I was just like, man, they must have tried really hard to edit this guy well.
Yep. I'm going to do the charitable, generous interpretation and just assume that he was a little hammered. Cause I think that's the most logical one. Cause the alternative is that the entire season he was like doing a reverse Kaiser Soze. And he takes the mask off and he's like, oh, secretly deep down inside, I was slurring my words the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
But anything else before we get to the results here?
I found it very funny that they keep saying nearly a quarter of $1 million. I did find that very funny. They keep saying nearly because, you know, it just gave. Look, in this season, there were the highs and the lows. And one of the highs that I have is that Kieran is the ultimate winner. He won in the end. I thought he was the star of the reunion. I thought his reunion segment was the funniest, honestly.
Yeah.
Because especially when he said, yeah, no, I'm no mastermind. I was a cockroach. Like, I was bad. Mm-hmm. And when they cut to Sarah, and Sarah gives a very candid response of, no, I don't think he was that strategic.
Yeah, they really tried to just close him in the trap. Like, Kieran, you really thought you were a mastermind, huh?
Yeah.
But like, he just owned it. All right.
Yeah, but that's why we love him. Because he has a great sense of humor. And that's why we like Sarah. Because she owns her, like, she, like, I don't think she, like, messes around either. But my thing is that every time they said nearly a quarter of a million, it just reminded me that, oh, despite the fact that Kieran got nominated 7 times and Casey was angry at him for, you know, using 2 cups of coffee, in the end, he's the one who won the most amount of money after Chad. So who's the real winner in the end.
Did anybody get second? Like, did you get anybody's second place money, third place money?
This is very like Australian Survival, whereby the second placer and everyone like down gets the same like stipend. It's yeah, not
so good. There you go.
Yeah.
Kieran walking away with more than Dan and Matt, more than Sophie,
more than Sarah.
Definitely made the better call there, taking the 15K over Sophie.
And I do think that, I mean, if you have to do like a power ranking of the people postseason, wouldn't you say Kieran is pretty high up there in terms of popularity? I would say so. Because I think
I would imagine. I think he's a little controversial, but like I think probably up, at least he inspires some emotional response.
I think at the end of the season, like all things considered, he was, yes, polarizing during it. But I think at the end, I think the fans have come around to him because the others were so bad to him. Like so bad to him. So there we go. That's the most interesting thing. And the other interesting thing is when Chad wins, Sophie, his showman, is nowhere to be seen. Did you notice that? He's hugging everyone but her. That was odd.
And man, I will say again, just like when she was reading out the results, I felt nothing. I was just like, and then she said Chad and I was like, yeah. Like it wasn't even that I felt nothing because I was like, it's a foregone conclusion that it's Chad, because I didn't really think that. I thought it's probably Chad, but I thought maybe they screwed this up. Maybe they overestimated themselves, or they just were like not thinking strategically as editors, which is very likely. And they ended up splitting the votes between Chad and Sophie, and maybe Dan might actually walk away with this. So I was theoretically hanging in suspense about, you know, who the winner might be. But when, you know, when she said it was Chad, I was just like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, you were busy throwing that necklace into the Titanic ocean. But Taryn, like, as an editor, how do you feel about the editing this entire season? I'm sure you have a lot of opinions from an editorial perspective. Considering everything that you now know, that, you know, like the Hannah Kieran showmance being left on the cutting room floor, all the showmance segments about Chad and Sophie, etc.
I can't specifically blame the editors themselves. This I think this is much more of a story producer or, you know, whatever they're called in Australia.
It's the same thing. Story producer. Problem. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's the people telling the editors that they're not allowed to use the good stuff, basically, because I think like the editing itself was actually pretty fine in terms of, you know, when they did have some decent stuff, they were able to put together some okay things. They obviously like way overused some footage, and that may be down on the editing itself. But like overall, like the storyline, the overall editing, it was bad. They made a lot of bad decisions in terms of like what to include and what not to include. They were way overbearing in terms of their thumb being on the scale and with the audience vote and with trying to tell us who we should like and who we shouldn't like throughout the whole season, all the way back to Talia. So it was everything I hate about an edited version of a show like this. And in a season where the edit mattered more than any other show like this. So it was very frustrating.
Yeah. I can't imagine how frustrating it must be for you, who is both a Big Brother super fan and an actual editor. it must be as frustrating as Angela being trapped in a ginger dread house with a poodle.
It doesn't even speak English.
I think that was my best, like that was my favorite part of the Angela reunion segment, when she forgot the name of the dog. Because like, that felt genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But look, about Chad, to close the chapter on the season, I think Chad winning feels apropos because he's not my preferred choice. It wasn't. But he wasn't my least favorite choice. It just feels like a meh. It's like the indifferent choice for me.
The Chad win is everything that you said was Australian reality television from the beginning. The boring Chad of the season, essentially. Like, it just is always going to win. And that's exactly what we saw.
And I kind of don't like the fact that I was right when I said that the Australian public will usually vote for a man over a woman. And that the last time a woman won Big Brother Australia was Terry Monroe in 2008. And I wish I wasn't right about that, but I guess, yeah, this is what it is. There we go.
Yeah. Well,
my question for you then is that, because we got some questions from the audience, which I think is the most interesting part. One of the questions we got was from at fake Michael MCD, Michael McDermott. His question was, how do you think that extending the 24-hour voting period to all of finale week or even 2 weeks via preferential voting would impact the public's voting outcome? So by preferential voting, it means that like you rank, like let's say that the voting is extended to like the final six, right? So Kieran is still in the house. So then every week, every like day that you vote, you can rank, you can submit votes based on like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then if like nobody crosses the 50% mark, then the person who's ranked six, their votes get redistributed and so on and so forth. Do you think that extending the voting window from 24 hours would change the final like outcome of the season?
Yes.
And how much of an impact do you think it would have changed?
I mean, basically, like the shorter the voting window, the more influence the producers have over the voting, because, you know, producers of a show, they know how to put something together to elicit a very specific response, but it's a fleeting response. You watch Chad cry about his dad in, you know, on Tuesday, and then you vote later that night on Tuesday, and you're still feeling the thing about Chad. If you have to wait until Thursday, if you've been voting or you will continue to vote, like by Thursday, you might have seen a post by Sophie on social media that where she talks about her dad, or you might have seen Sophie do something else that you liked, or maybe Sophie mentioned a song that you like and you're like, oh, I'm just like Sophie. We like the same music. Like there's all sorts of different things that could change your mind in the short term. So it's very easy to manipulate the popular vote in that sort of very short window. But when you have it, when you have a long period of time, especially if it's ranked choice, then the producers have much less control over the outcome. And I think that is honestly one of the reasons why it's not like that.
Then if the voting were done for all of finale week, so final four onwards, so Sarah, Sophie, Matt, and Dan, who do you think wins in the final three then? Do you still think it's Chad, or do you think Sophie wins, or do you think Dan wins?
So assuming that production doesn't change their edit based on the fact that we have a different voting system, which I think they would, but assuming they don't, then I think that like all of last week, you're getting straight Sophie votes all week long. And Sarah is probably up there, either number one or number, I think it's probably Sarah and Sophie number one and two in whatever order. And then probably Chad number three further down, whatever. And so you're getting all of that Sophie stuff. Then coming into this week, you're probably still Sophie after the first episode. Maybe some people have switched to Chad. And then it's only by the last one that everyone's like full on with Chad. But by then it's too late, I think. And Sophie still gets number two with Chad. And so I think Sophie probably takes it if people have been voting for a while.
You heard it here first, folks. You know, the Queen of Sheba, the Khaleesi, the Ice Queen, she was robbed. The producers dethroned the queen.
Well, like I said, I think they would have changed how they edited it. If they wanted Chad to win, they could have just made that happen earlier if they knew people were voting already.
I'm just scrolling through some of the questions. You know that the audience is apathetic when half the questions are about ask Karen how angry he is or how little he cares.
on the scale of angry to apathy, I have gone from full anger to full apathy. I've reached my breaking point.
You've done the full circle of our grieving, like all five stages. We're back to the beginning of not caring. Okay, here's a question from at Chris Christo, an interesting one, which is not about how apathetic Taryn is. It's if you had to pick five people from this season to bring back for a BB US season or an All-Stars, who would they be? And then in brackets, it hilariously said, if Karen really doesn't care, he can just list two people.
I was about to say, did you say five?
Yeah, that's why I find it so funny. The question in like it already recognizes that, oh, five is hard because he cares very little. He can just do two.
Brother US, I think I'd often have trouble finding five people on a single season.
So let's just do two. Let's just do two each. How about that?
I mean, I guess give me Sarah. I mean, she wasn't like super compelling, though. Give me Angela, number one.
Yeah.
And you know what? Give me Subong.
Ooh, number two. Subong's good. We barely knew you, Subong. We wish we knew you, though.
Yeah.
I will do five because I'll try my best. This is hard. I would say in no particular order, Angela and Sarah, because I think Sarah, I want to see how she does in a few years from now with more life experience under her belt to see if she just rolls over and dies again during an HOH. For three, four, and five, I say Hannah. Hannah deserves better. She does. Alan, I actually think Alan was really fun.
Yeah,
I would like to see what he does. And I think he has Devin from BB16 Oxide.
So. I do think that Alan burns out early on every season he goes on, but I think he has more potential to be entertaining on a US season than an Australian one.
And he was entertaining on the Australian one too. It's like dynamite.
I think he could have been more fun.
Devin,
we wouldn't, instead of seeing him in the diary room talking constantly, we would have seen him like in the house and other people talking, and like, you know, he would have been trying to make alliances instead of just like, I'm doing everything I can perfectly. Like, okay, can we see this?
It's like, so we're the Brains tribe. I'd like to see that data. Mm-hmm. It's very Cass McQuillan, and the final person I would say is Marissa. I think I like the relationship, the friendship between Marissa and Angela. And I think the two of them, like, doing the amazing race, I think would be really funny. Can you imagine, like, Marissa and Angela being in, like, I don't know, some part of in South America, and the car breaks down, and Angela is like, where's my teeth? And Marissa has to push the car out from behind. No, I just think that'd be fun. But yeah, those are my five. Thank you, Chris. The last question is from Matt Andonov, and the question is: so, who from the rumored BB22 cast would do the best at Big Brother Australia, and why? How about I change that question for you? Who from like the last 3 years of Big Brother US, anyone, do you think would do the best on Big Brother Australia? Like anybody?
Well, I think I was gonna land on Janelle. Because I think she'd dominate the competitions and I think she'd win a vote in the end. Last three seasons, another one of my inclinations was Tyler, who would be able to play the game really well, would be able to do very well in the competitions, and was the fan favorite at the end. So I think Tyler would also be very much up there in terms of being able to do well.
I endorse those choices. If I had to pick someone different, it's hard. I actually think Nicole Anthony would do well, because I think even when she wasn't getting a lot of airtime, the fans still liked her. She just is a, I think her and Kemi, actually, I'd say both of them. I think actually Kemi, that's who I would pick. I think she would actually do very well on Big Brother Australia because she's just a naturally funny person. And I also think that much like how the public here, I think, came around to Angela, I think I could see Kemi going very far because she is no slouch in a competition. She's likable, and I think she can win a public vote. Yeah, so I'll say Kemi. Justice for Kemi.
I love it. I love it. You know which buttons to press with me.
No, but I do believe that, though, because I do think that, like, Kemi is a good fit for Big Brother Australia. I really do.
Just make the suggestion. Let's get her flown over.
After the pandemic. After the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I guess nothing else. No other questions. My final, I guess this is where we will put in our thoughts about, I have a question for you, Taryn, I guess. One is, would you, are you, how do you feel about season two coming up? And two, what would you need to see in season two in order for you to like be excited for it?
I would need to see changes, changes to the format, changes to the editing, changes to the casting. I would want to see the producers owning up to the fact that this was not a good season. And again, I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority on that. Maybe people really enjoyed this and they don't want things to change. And that's totally cool. Like, if that's the case, if there's a lot of people that love this and want to see it stay the same, you know, it's not for me to change it. Like, I can just bounce, or whatever, you know, you guys enjoy your stuff. But this to me was a failure. I feel like, I would imagine that for most people, it wasn't BBUK enough. If they were looking for that, it wasn't BB Australia enough. If people were looking for that, it wasn't BBUS or BB Canada enough for the people looking for that. And what it ended up as was some kind of mixture that did not fully please anybody and probably annoyed a lot of people. That's what I've seen. I am immersed in BBUS culture, and so maybe that is not the case in Australia or elsewhere. But it did. I mean, it seems to have done well in the ratings.
Well enough. Number one, yeah.
So you know, who am I to say they're doing something wrong? You know, if this is what their audience wants, then go for it.
Except this is not what the audience wants. As an Australian, let me tell you, many people not happy with how this ended. I'm noticing a lot of indifference towards the Chad win. A lot of people, I think, voted for Chad primarily because they were like, well, I just don't want to give Dan the satisfaction of a win. That's the main prevailing thought that I'm noticing. And to add on to what you were saying earlier about this is not BBUK enough, it's not BBUS enough, you know what it is? It's BB Rise of Skywalker. That's what it is.
Yeah.
There we go. I guess my final thoughts is I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk about this season, even though it was a bit mediocre at times. I very much enjoyed it. And I hope that the people who stuck it in all this long, you know, that they enjoyed Karen and I parenting about this. So
you were a great foil for me because you were able to sort of like remain invested in like I think the show like means something to you, and you were also able to like take in my ranting about it and not like not like fight me back on it, like, you know what I mean? Like we were able, I felt like we bounced off each other well. I enjoyed this. I thought this was fun.
We have a good rapport. I think I would say we have more chemistry than the bromance. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're both buddies in Broken Hill. That's what we are. Thank you very much, though. I appreciate the opportunity you've given me, and I hope that everyone else who's stuck in here this long has found some enjoyment from it, because I think I've enjoyed recapping this more than actually watching the show. So
yes, fun. That's for sure.
Hashtag BB Rise of Skywalker.
Yes. All right. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us all season long. I hope that you enjoyed the podcast. Again, if you enjoyed the show, I still hope you enjoyed the podcast. I think, you know, it is not my goal to make you not enjoy something that you were enjoying. Hopefully, if you enjoyed the show, you can find pleasure in watching me fail to do what you succeeded at doing, right? You're a better Big Brother Australia watcher than I am. You were able to find the joy that I could not. So revel in that and make fun of me in your mind instead of anything else.
It's ironic though that such a mixed bag of television has produced some of your best rants ever. It's like this show had just enough for you to initially get interested, so then that you would then get annoyed and then like slowly ease you into apathy. It was like a slow, drawn out moment.
It was also like the only thing around for a little while. I think that was a big part of it as well.
Yeah, well, Karen, now you know how it felt like to be in a relationship with my ex. This is what it's like. It's a slow descent. Thank you, everybody. I'm here every Friday. Try the chicken tenders.
All right. That is really it. That's what we've got. Thank you again for joining us all season long. Andrew, once more, where can people find you? And make sure you do so, because this is going to be your last chance. So when he says it, go look it up and follow him.
I'm at Andrew W. The Litta Shim. So Andrew W. Shim, M for Mary, on Instagram and Twitter. Send me your best Star Wars memes, because I need something to awaken my force.
There you go. You can find me at Armstrong Taren, and you can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/TarenArmstrong. We've got Big Brother All-Stars, Big Brother 22, coming up very soon. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Let's go.
We'll be going live all summer. So, well, really all summer and fall, I guess. So check it out, and we'll see you next time.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.